driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom." And with all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and listen to the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and you'll hear the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook and Time for Awakening Media. The homepage, home base is there. Just type in, and it should be one of your favorites by now. But if not, just type in www. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. There you'll see more interesting content and blogs, podcasts of the programs that you can download, listen at later times, even share with your friends. Again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. There'll be just some changes still being made to the homepage, but you can still access everything that all the articles and the podcasts. It'll be just new things being added. Links for the other programs and their podcasts will be added within the next couple of weeks. So some minor changes being done, but it won't shut down the page, so you'll still be able to go to the homepage. And again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, a couple special guests stopping by to talk about the pre-Kwanzaa marketplace at the Church of the Advocate, Brother Oba, Brother Heru, and Brother Farouk of the African Independence Day Organizing Committee will be stopping by to talk about the upcoming event and just to kick around some issues with us, because we're in kind of an open forum this evening. In the second hour of the program, Professor Carl Tone Jones will be stopping by to talk about his upcoming documentary, The Independence Day Project. Interesting film. I've heard some rave reviews about it, but he'll be stopping by in the 8 o'clock hour sometime to talk about it himself and to join the conversation. and join the conversation with you. And we'll get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back. The time for an awakening. And before we get started this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother L.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. It's relaxing here and getting ready to engage about the future of us and the activities that we should be involved in around this cultural moment that taking advantage of. and celebrating. So I'm doing fine.
Two things, because I want to read the announcement, but two things I want to apologize to the listening audience for the cancellation of the live program Friday. We had a kind of a flash or surprise snowstorm here in Philadelphia, a little minor snowstorm, but it really messed up the traffic.
Even for us on foot, it was like I had to walk, Elliot. I mean, the bus just didn't come.
Yeah, well, a trip that usually take me 20 minutes, it took me 2 hours. And by the time I got here, it was too late to start the program. So, again, I want to apologize to the listening audience, but the live stream was playing. And I don't know what program was on, but I'm quite sure the listening audience got a lot out of it. Before we get started, I want to read the announcement that we've been sharing with the listening audience for the past maybe month and a half. The African Independence Day Organizing Committee and Urban Shaman Productions presents the Buy Black Marketplace and Pre-Kwanzaa Celebration. It's Saturday, December 23rd, 2017, at the historic Church of the Advocate, 1801 Diamond Street in Philadelphia. The donation at the door is $5, but children are admitted absolutely free. There'll be guest performances, speakers, the ceremonial lighting of the Kanara. It's still not too late if vendors are interested. Three ways you can contact them. You can email them at africanindependenceday@gmail.com. Again, that's africanindependenceday@gmail.com. You can log to the website at africanindependenceday.org. Again, that's africanindependenceday.org. Or you can give them a call at 267-521-1544. Again, that's 267-521-1544. It's the second annual Buy Black Marketplace and Pre-Kwanzaa Celebration at the historic Church of the Advocate, 1801 Diamond Street in Philadelphia. That's December 23rd again, and donation is $5 at the door. Children are admitted absolutely free. Brother Oba has been on with us before, and I'm glad to have him back. Brother Oba is joined by Brother Haru and Brother Farouk of the African Independence Day Organizing Committee that's putting on the second annual Buy Black Marketplace, and they've done several other events. We're going to talk to them this evening and join them into the conversation. Brother Oba, are you there?
Yes, sir. We're here, brother.
How are you, sir?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. Glad to have you
with us.
Yes,
sir.
Glad to have you back with us on Time for Awakening with myself and Brother Richard.
Yeah, it's a pleasure for myself and Brother Kamua to be here with you tonight and to be guest once again on Time for an Awakening.
Brother Oba, tell us a little bit about the second annual Buy Black Marketplace and Pre-Kwanzaa Celebration. Is this the second time it's been a Church of Advocate, or is this the first time?
This is the second time that we as the African Independence Day Organizing Committee and Urban Shaman Productions have had it at the Church of the Advocate. This is our second year. This event, as far as a pre-Kwanzaa celebration and a Buy Black Marketplace, has been going on for some time. We've been doing this since the old Pearl of Africa days, down with Brother Ahmed, who is the founder of the Nation of African People's Unity, as well as African Independence Day. So this has been going on since like 2004.
Okay.
And so, you know, we just decided last year as a committee to put our heads together. And Brother Kamua came up with an idea to have a Buy Black Marketplace. And we liked the idea. And he said he wanted to have it in the month of December because of the fact that people, you know, buying gifts and things of that nature for Kwanzaa to create a marketplace for them to have it. So then I said, well, let's just attach the pre-Kwanzaa celebration onto it like we used to do back at the old Pearl of Africa. And thus, that's what came to life. So basically, it was Brother Kamu's idea to, you know, start a Buy Black Marketplace.
To talk about the response that you've gotten from the community, because I know a lot of people there into the European holidays and Christmas and things of that nature. So if they're coming down to buy, they're coming down to buy. But talk about the response that you've gotten from the community, vendors and things of that nature.
Yeah, we have a overflowing of
vendors who have came and reached out to us. We actually met our goal in terms of vendors who are going to vend. I meant, but
oh, so you really, so you already at your limit, huh?
We at our limit.
Okay.
But to see that, you know, Black people come and you know, really are reaching out, you know, strongly expressing that they want to be a part of it. Is just see how the Black dollar can be generated within our community. And that's the whole idea of this event. We have a invite page. Our invite page, we have over 2,500 people said that they're interested. Over 300
that are coming. And the flyer's been shared.
It's been shared about a couple hundred
almost 500 times.
Okay.
So a lot of people are interested. We're expecting to have a really big turnout. And once again, this event is a fundraising event that moving towards August, the first weekend of August, we are going to have our 14th annual African Independence Day celebration of Ma'at at the Malcolm X Park. So once again, this is solely generated by Black dollars. This is a community event by us, for us. And, you know, we're just going to keep on doing this, carrying the legacy of Hamed.
As well as the fact that it's also a fundraiser for the Marcus Garvey Parade. So we definitely don't want to forget that is a, you know, we will be having the Marcus Garvey Parade again this year because of the overwhelming response and the support that we received from the community and just how beautiful it was last year. The Marcus Garvey Parade will become a standard part of the African Independence Day Ma'at celebration. So this is a fundraiser for both the Marcus Garvey Parade and the 14th annual African Independence Day Ma'at celebration on August the 4th.
Okay. The let me get these because I want to make sure I got these dates straight. August the 4th is the parade.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And give me the date on the celebration at the Malcolm X Park.
Well, they're both on the same day. They're both on
okay.
Saturday,
okay,
August
good.
The 4th.
All right.
First
okay.
is the parade, and then secondly is African Independence Day, my celebration.
Okay. Now, Brother Oba and Brother Kamal, talk about some of the performances, the guests that's going to be there.
Oh, well, definitely. A Bob Black Marketplace pre-Kwanzaa celebration wouldn't be complete without Baba Robert and Mama Wanda Dickerson of the UMB Community Center in Camden and the Universal African Dance and Drum Ensemble. They will be performing, as well as, of course, my brother Kamua's band, the legendary Urban Shamans of the city of Philadelphia. And I'll let Brother Kamua talk more about the Urban Shamans, as well as Sister Aramis will be performing. So I'm going to let him talk about Sister Aramis and the Urban Shamans performance at the pre-Kwanzaa celebration.
Okay.
So a lot of people know of us throughout Philadelphia. We've been around as long as the African Independence Day event has been around. So we've been very much always a part of African Independence Day. But the Urban Shamans is a fusion band, a mixture of hip-hop, reggae, Afrobeat, spoken word, hip-hop. So it's really a nice mixture of sound. We have been doing this for a while. We worked with many different artists throughout the years. Sister Amaris Sila, who is a spoken word artist, is coming in out of town from Florida. She's a dynamic sister, is very intelligent and very powerful with her spoken word. And we're just going to bring y'all a musical treat. We have several speakers. We have Ryan Green, who represents What's Up African Apparel.
Mm-hmm.
He will be one of the speakers.
All right. And we pretty much cut our list short based on the response of vendors. We wanted to make this truly a marketplace.
Okay.
But also we're going to have the traditional lighting of the Kanar by Mama Maisha. And we're also will have activities for youth. Sister Sunshine, she will be putting together some activities
also with the comic book creators. So we're going to have several activities for children. So definitely a fun-filled day of activities, information, and, you know, bring an extra couple bucks to come out here and spend some money.
Okay. You know, I like the fact that that young people are going to be involved in this event. In fact, all of your events, Brother Oba, it's a mixture, but I see a lot of young people at the events, which is, and I know that makes Richard happy because it's a tendency when you go around to conscious events, and I know you brothers could speak to this issue, it seems to be always an older crowd that seems to be at a lot of events that at least I've been to dealing with the conscious community. Or grassroots, or people that's conscious, period. It don't have to be labeled a conscious community. But your events seem to be different. It has a different vibe to it. It has a lot of young people involved. And that really kind of puts a different spin on things. It makes you feel as though a lot of these messages are being heard.
Well, I think, for one, it's important to make all your events intergenerational. But you got the elders. You have, you know, your tweeners and you have your young people. You have to make it intergenerational. We have to be about building a bridge where there is no bridge or building a bridge where there was a bridge. We have to connect things intergenerationally. And that's some of the things that, you know, as a committee, we talk about all the time. How are we going to be able to promote this event where it can bridge us together as a people? So we really purposely go about making all of our events intergenerational, something for everybody to participate in, have fun and involve themselves in, and most importantly, educational. It is very, very important that we do that. But also you got to remember, too, that myself, Brother Kamua, Brother Faru, our entire team, Sister Moore, even, you know, Brother Sabor, we are the hip hop generation, you know. So although some of us are, you know, 40 plus, you know, we grew up in an era and a time in which, you know, hip hop culture, we remember that era and that time in the late 80s, early 90s, in this golden age that hip hop was conscious. I grew up in the midst of that. So did Brother Farouk, so did Brother Kamua. We all grew up in that. So hip-hop culture, especially from the conscious standpoint, played a role in the molding and the shaping and the development of the men that we've grown into today. And so we always want to have a connection to young people. Brother Kamua works in the schools, and I'm sure he's going to talk a little bit about that, some more about that, but he works in the schools with young people. I've worked in schools with young people. We've ran rites of passage programs. We've ran JEGNA programs with young people, guiding them and bringing them along in consciousness and into African-centered thought and ideology. So we have always strived to make it our mission to connect with young people, but most importantly, to make all of our events intergenerational.
Okay. Brother Richard?
Yes, I want to commend y'all for what the continuing to do the work you've been doing around this. And Elliot and Brother Oba and Brother Kamua, if you give me a second, I just want to take one paragraph out of Dr. Chancellor Williams' The Rebirth of African Civilization, because I believe it places context around the pre-Kwanzaa celebration and the Buy Black. And this is in his summing up out of there. He says, "We have accordingly been dealing very largely with possible programs of action. We speak of an entire nation being organized as a cooperative democracy. First, because the society itself must be organized and functioning that it provides the conditions necessary for the development of a finer human beings. Secondly, because each for all and all for each spirit of the cooperative is religion operating in the daily lives of the people. And thirdly, because the self-help and individual initiative fostered in each local community means personal freedom,
a new sense of personal worth and self-respect, and the formation of needed capital through united action that could never be acquired by the poor members of the group acting independently. And above all, because the cooperative means the progressive ownership and control of major local industries by the people of the local community. And what I hear in this initiative is that cooperative, that community coming to community ownership by wanting to circulate the money, circulate your funds. And Brother Oba, you always speak about African values. So how my question is, how do you see the marketplace, the Buy Black, the pre-Kwanzaa reinforcing African values?
I think they're all one and the same. I think they're just different aspects of where we are as far as African people in America. You have to remember that our situation is very unique, unlike any other African in the world, wherever they're at. It's a very unique situation. So it's a two-pronged thing. One, it's about, the propagation and furthering a spotlight on our culture. And at the same time, it's also understanding that we are in a code red condition as a people, and that we have to be about preserving our culture and being keepers of the culture. And by having events such as whether it's African Independence Day, whether it's the Marcus Garvey Parade, whether it's, you know, this Buy Black pre-Kwanzaa, African Marketplace, or any events that we do, we have to remember and keep in mind that it is really about the idea of all those principles of Kwanzaa, all those principles that are mentioned in Yogusa Saba, living them each and every day and being examples of that by the work that you do as far as these events are concerned. Each one of them embodies those various different principles. So my thing is that it's understanding our situation, understanding that we have to put on events that educate our people, also and edutain our people at the same time, as well as understanding that, you know, we're in a warlike condition, and that we have to understand that we're in a warlike stance, and we have to handle ourselves as such, because we have young people looking at us. We have young people who are watching everything that we say and everything that we do, and that we have to understand the example that we set and the tone that we set for them.
And Brother Kamau, you know, in the context of what Brother Oba just mentioned, and what he had mentioned earlier, as far as being y'all being a member of the hip hop generation, and though I'm not actually grew up with it, I was influenced by it. Elliot, I don't know if I'm at that point, you know, that elder point yet, but I'll leave that alone because I don't know if I'm behind that yet. But Brother Kamau, you know, the thing that sparked me was the question about, as a cultural artist, because what Brother Oba said was that that the artist as you are and that you're associated with help to educate, help to inspire a generation that you're a member of. Do you see the impact, and do you feel satisfied in the contribution that you're making in providing another generation the inspiration that is culturally centered and motivating for them as an artist?
Absolutely. As Oba said, I definitely have been inspired and motivated through the culture of hip hop, you know, directly impacting me as a young man, inspiring me, you know, in my early 20s to become, you know, more involved in music. Through this journey of music, there's a lot I learned about myself, and I learned about, you know, just persevering in this artistic expression. And particularly that which expressed social activism in terms of the Black community, cultural identity in terms of African people. We are a very unique group. So with that, we set out with a explicit purpose to infuse hip-hop and the message within what it is that we present. And so throughout the years, we performed with many different artists. I remember re-acclimating this event 3 years ago. We had a huge response from the young generation, just in particularly in terms of artistry. So, I mean, I can't get around the city without someone saying, look, guys, you know, when I have another event, we want to be involved. I remember I just ran into Oba and brought in South, and we ran into two young brothers who are hip-hop artists. And a brother was just so excited to share with me what it is that he does. And, you know, I was really touched because the kind of music that he was trying to express is the music that we attempted to express. So, you know, he seen the likeness in what it is that I'm involved in. And, you know, he just wanted to highlight that and point it out that, like, yo, we continue on a legacy. So this young brother is about 20 years younger than me. You know, I'm 40 years old. So, you know, it is a connection. It is a perpetual journey of work that, you know what I'm saying, is happening. So nothing has been done in vain from the elders who inspired me, the Roy Lightfoot Bay, who was my teacher, who introduced me to traditional African music. And, you know, he passed 2003. I'm just happy to carry on the legacy of our elders.
And do y'all think that, you know, when we're talking, especially in this time, you know, this period of time of in this month of December and around the cultural nuance that we've been perpetuating over many years and kind of focused over the last 40 or more years. Do you think that we and Philadelphia, and I take it that both of you are from Philadelphia, we have are we networking our economic, our culture and our economic space to be more productive? And hopefully this question is clear in the sense that we're able to, even out of this time period, we can, as you mentioned, kind of not only just be able to put on events, but build a cultural commerce economy. Do you think that we're at that point in Philadelphia, or where do you think we are at that point in Philadelphia of building a culture and commerce economy that is specific to the culture of Black Philadelphia?
I guess I'll answer the first part of that, and then Brother Kamu definitely will come in on this. I think that personally, I think that idea has been discussed. I think that idea has been thrown around. I think that idea has been, marinated on and thought about, but I don't think that it's been moved upon. And even if it has been moved upon, I don't think that we're anywhere near close to creating that type of economy. I think that we have certain kind of entities that exist that look at African culture as something profitable, as something chic, as something quote unquote the hip thing to do, who make money off of it and are culture bandits instead of being people who want to pool their resources to bring about a cultural economy in some ways through, you know, cultural events that we do. We got a long way to go in that area. Some individuals are doing the right thing. Some individuals are doing it in the way in which it's for the community and not for themselves. There's several different events that currently go on in Philadelphia that I know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, do that. Others leave a lot to be desired, but quote unquote call themselves cultural events that are about educating and edutaining and African people and events that have the values of African people, or the best interest, their best interests at heart. And I dare to say that I don't think so. But you know, we can move in that direction. At least I know that we, as far as the African Independence Day Urban Shamans Productions, our committee is moving in that direction. Okay. At least.
Yeah, I was just wondering, is that a just direction to move in from your vantage point? And I just wanted to be clear about that. Do you think it is a just that we should be moving in that direction?
Absolutely, 100%. We should be moving in that direction. The potential is here. You know, all the components for us to have the economic, the cultural economic reservoir of resources is here. You know, it's just how do we centralize that? Now, it's easier said than done, because we've been working with a lot of different groups, a lot of institutions. And, you know, it's very tricky. And because everybody don't have the core values.
That's right.
And so what we realize is that, you know, if we're going to be about this, that we have to do this with integrity.
That's right.
And we have to demonstrate, you know, how to do it. So just what you're speaking of, as an artist, you know, just in the artist cultural sector, I see the potential. A lot of people say, wow, you know, you guys as a band have been around since 2004. That's pretty long for a band, because bands break up. Well, you know, I would say that, you know, the Urban Shamans have been supported by this cultural community. They hire us year in and year out for cultural ceremonies and events and all occasions. And we've been able to maintain that, because running a band is definitely a business. Right. And so through that, we, you know, grew our brand into the Urban Shamans production, in which we provide video production, audio production, in which we provide for all the events of African Independence Day, various different fundraising events. And, you know, we also are teachers. I'm a teacher. Mm-hmm. And so cultural enrichment is what I do. Amongst other things. So the potential is there. The resources are here. It's just moving on principle and maintaining the integrity to demonstrate what it's supposed to be.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can get involved in this conversation. And we're going to have another special guest join us in the 8 o'clock hour, Professor Carl Tone Jones. The Independence Day Project documentary film will be released. We'll get him to talk about when it's going to be released. We'll get him to talk about the project in itself, and then we'll kick around some issues. You can always be involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Our special guest while we're here in open forum is Brother Oba and Brother Kamau of the African Independence Day Organizing Committee, talking about the pre-Kwanzaa Marketplace that'll be at the Church of the Advocate here in Philadelphia, and we're going to spin off into some other issues. We'll be right back. You can join us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215 215- 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your hosts, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
In 1492, you came up on the shores, 700 years educated by the Moors. 17th century, genocide and the gun. Middle Passage blessed to market the Africans in the so-called land of God. My kind were treated hard. From back then until now, I see and you agree, we have been a misrepresented people. From back then until now, just see my family tree, we have been a misrepresented people. We have been a misrepresented people.
Represented people.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. Tonight, we're in semi-open form. You can call and get involved in the conversation. We have Brother Oba and Brother Kamal with us from the African Independence Day Organizing Committee, talking about the pre-Kwanzaa, second annual pre-Kwanzaa Marketplace celebration at the Historic Church of the Advocate here in Philadelphia, where we're going to spin off and talk about some other issues. And joining us sometime around the 8 o'clock hour, between 8 and 8:30, will be Professor Carl Tone Jones. The documentary film, The Independence Day Project, will be the topic of discussion, and issues centered around the new documentary. Let me get the Brother Uber, Brother Kamal back with us. Brothers, listen, question, because we'll spin off into just banter some things around before Professor Carl Tone Jones joins us. Brother Uber, you talked about the code red conditions that our people are in now. The sad thing about it is that some of our people, I would dare say a small segment of our people, don't realize the condition that we're in. It's almost like you throw a crustacean in a hot pot of water, or a frog into a hot pot of water. In the cold water, and you start heating it up. They don't realize, they'll just sit in there and die. They don't realize that the water's getting hot all the time. I think it's necessary now that these messages go out, whether it be through what you men are doing, whether it be through rites of passage for our youth, because especially in this age, a lot of our youth now is being bombarded with cultural mores from other people, other lifestyles that were important to other people when they governed themselves in Europe. These things are being pushed on our children. And if we don't counteract these things and show our children parts of our culture and where these things wasn't an accepted part of our culture, where among other cultures, some of these lifestyles were accepted. If we don't push back, then some of our young people will figure these things are all right. And not because they want to be involved in it, just through ignorance of not knowing. And maybe some of their parents are ignorant of these things. But, I mean, I see all that what you men are doing are important in changing the paradigm that our people suffer. I want to mention some things in reference to economics, because that's all a part of Kwanzaa and Umoja. But express your feelings on what I just mentioned about the importance of showing, and I'll use the term that Brother Richard likes to use from the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors, putting down that clean glass.
For me, mm-hmm. I'm going to use an expression that our good brother, Brother Faruma, who's a part of the African Independence Day Organizing Committee as well, uses all the time. It's huge. It is so huge. For me, my experience, and I think I shared this last time I was on your show, Brother Elliot, I grew up in this. This is all I know all my life. I'm 46 years of age currently. And I grew up in this, so I have a different vantage point. For me, it's huge. Everything that I was exposed to coming up as a child, by both my mother and my father, being in the, spiritual tradition that I was raised in, and in the culture in which I was raised in the household that I was raised in, everything reflected, being an African.
Okay.
Even when there were things I watched on television, or things I was exposed to and reading comic books and magazines, and I was a huge comic book fan coming up as a child, a huge science fiction fantasy fan coming up. I always saw it, or had a filter of an African lens in which to see it through, so that I didn't allow for a lot of the European, or my parents didn't allow for a lot of the European influences to infiltrate and to totally cloud and distort my mind. So when my time came and I saw the work that my parents were doing and how active they were and still are, as far as African people were concerned, all the people that they helped, from various different people who on the street to their various different students that they taught in school because they were both educators. I knew when my time came, I wanted to help people. I saw what my parents did, and so I mimicked the behavior of my parents, and I knew when my time came that I wanted to be prepared and ready. And I also had a very supportive family, brothers, sisters, cousins, who were conscious. Okay, so I come from a conscious family, not just immediate family, but extended family. So when my time came, I wanted to be prepared. So all the things that I had learned, all the experiences that I had acquired, all the knowledge that I had gained, to be able to share that with young people who didn't come from the same situation that I came from. A lot of people don't come from the same situation I came from, and I'm unique in that sense. So, you know, for me, it's really about establishing those things that people have not been exposed to. This is why we do what we do. It's so important. And these events are events. And, you know, in the bigger scheme of things, you know, they wouldn't be seen as being large, but they really are, because you're exposing the people to something that they've never been exposed to before. I always say that Kwanzaa is a bridge to a greater understanding of African spiritual cosmology. But it first starts with you acquiescing and understanding those seven principles of the Oguza Saba, from unity being umoja to faith being, you know, imani. You have to understand those, and you got to incorporate those things in your life. But it opens you up to a much larger world of African spiritual cosmology, because that's what I believe that is best for our people, and I believe that that is the direction in which African people must go. So that is my job. That's our job as a committee. To do that, to have events that expose our people who have never practiced Kwanzaa, don't really know anything about the Oguza Saba, don't know anything about its history, where it comes from, as far as its history being, a history out of, Kiswahili culture. It's our job to do that, because because with interest in that, it possibly can lead people on to a greater understanding of African spiritual cosmology, thus a better understanding of themselves.
Okay. Brother Kamal, any comments on that also?
Yeah, I mean, it's oversaid it.
Okay.
Know? It's about actualizing these principles, and showing people, like, on a continuous basis, how we live these principles. Like you said, for a lot of people, this is a first-time experiencing of African tradition here, practice. And, you know, I remember family members of mine who've come to our events, you know, sat, you know, quietly and just observed, and, you know, when I came near them and had an opportunity, they had so many questions, or they expressed, you know, how joyous they were participating with what it is. But through the years, they've seen me transform myself. They've seen me commit myself to what it is that, you know, I express. And there have been family members who I have a nephew who contacted me. You know, he's starting his first business, and it's very much expressing what it is that he's been introduced by his mother, which is, you know, my cousin. And so people, you know, are ignited to, you know, to participate, to gain more information, and to become more involved. So this is definitely the definition of Kwanzaa for us, you know, all seven principles, you know, living it, you know, in actual time.
If I may, you know, and,
right,
and I'm And I'm kind of, and then this is for the dialogue, right? Hopefully everybody's, so what y'all are doing is stimulating my thought, because in this time period, it's always, you know, I'm one of those people of didn't know that I was African and my evolution and where y'all are, you know, in time period of 40, I can remember, I guess, coming through Philadelphia at that point and then 20, but now being 60, and in the 60s and now kind of listening back, I'm saying, I'm looking at this time period of us as a nation, you know, a ethnic nation with a cultural specific of Philadelphia. And as you said, Brother Oba, you know, kind of the whole thing of, you know, Odunde was not just a cultural event, but it was a political, a cultural and economic event in my mind, you know. So the question is always come taking this as a part of our self-governing, not just our personal development, but a part of our governing, development of our governance, utilizing these principles. And I think you made reference to that. So I think that we're all in that, you know, on that stream, in that stream of flowing to consolidate this government action, this government administering, which is primary one role, is to educate, you know, educate the community itself to the principles. So that brings me to the question. Do you think we're being, do you gentlemen think that we're being effective, even to the ones that are aware of continuously educating around our cultural principles, and that effectiveness showing in relationship to our output? And you keep hearing me make these references to that business model, because it's not just the principles, but we're supposed to produce something, right? To be a nation, you're supposed to produce something. So I'm asking you from your reflection to help us and help the audience in general, what do you see? Are we becoming effective? Kwanzaa is what, 60? So, and this is, is it around 50, 60 years in being?
Kwanzaa started in 58, 59. So,
yeah, about six, almost 60, yeah.
60 years.
Yeah, actually, this is the 51st anniversary of Kwanzaa this year.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, so, I mean.
Yes, it's 51 years old this year.
And so we, you know, if we kind of assess looking at you gentlemen at 40, us at 60, you know, how far along are we in instilling these cultural values and operating and governing our national output? So I'm asking for your reflection on that.
To be honest with you, no, we're not. We still are in a war of irreconcilable reality. Until we have our own, then I think then you'll see the full effect of what it is that we do. You're seeing some changes made, and you're seeing some improvement, but it's not enough. We have to have our own. And until we win this war of irreconcilable realities, and I'm talking about a European reality versus an African reality, and that African reality that we must create wins out, and creating a community, a functional community of our own, then I think we're going to see little results. I mean, we'll see some results, but it won't be enough. We have to have our own in order to see the and create the type of world and type of conditions in order to really see effectively all those things that we're doing culturally come into fruition. So I would say at this present time in 2017, no.
And if I can, Elliot, you know, just push the thought a little bit, is that because we're not networking? Because the way I see it, it's not about place, right? It's about relationships. So is it because, you know, when you look at us, the elder, quote unquote, elder generation, those are 60, and we look at you, and I think he said, how do you say that? I didn't catch that. Tween? Those who are 40 and below, say between 20 and 40, are we networking our relationships effectively with each other? And that's why we're not, our national output isn't what it is, or is it something else that you see, I mean, or that y'all see? Is it because that, you know, like I took what you're saying as kind of we have to have our own space, our own place, in our own time. Well, right now we have
as to, as well as doing things our own way,
right,
in an African way.
Right, right. So is that we're in the place we are, we're in the space we are, but we can create the relationships that with each other, that African way of relationships. Is it because we're not effectively creating the app with each other? And I'm asking you to look at the prior generation, that whether they have done it, or look at your generation and say whether y'all are doing it.
It's interesting enough. So I work at a middle school, and a teacher, I'm an academic support. I do a little bit of everything at this job. There was an eighth grade teacher who has a English class. She asked me to come in because her eighth graders, which are 13, 14-year-olds, you know, she's sharing a book with them, and the book is set in the 60s. And so she asked me to come in and talk about the 60s. And the reason I bring that up is because we have every generation, for whatever reason, there is a sort of memory loss to what happened, what was the prior generations involved with. And so we have, as we move forward, new generations, we have the millennials. And this generation, of course, just like every other generation, there's a sort of consistency with each generation. They want to do something new. They want to do something different. They want something to, you know, express them, and they want to define themselves as a generation. And so what happens is that we continue to recreate what it is, or try to redefine ourselves. But still and yet, we still struggle with the same issues as a people collectively. In terms of us spinning our wheels and working and putting out this message and this this cultural knowledge and wisdom, I don't think that is ineffective, but I also think that I feel like a lot of us exist in pods throughout the city. So you have your pod, we have our pod, and we're working and working. And as you said, I don't think that enough networking or collaboration. I know one of the things that has been really good for us in African Independence Day is doing just that, networking, you know, unifying with various different groups who are have the same principles aligned and are willing to make what it is that they have stronger, what we have stronger. We have to do more of that intentionally, not by accident. We have to intentionally set out working together. We can't say, okay, I created something new, and, you know, this is brand new and is different from everyone else, because, believe it or not, there's nothing new about what you're doing, you know, and reach out to various different collectives of individuals. And there has been really good examples to answer your question as in terms of the economics. I've seen really good examples of individuals making that work. Universal Dance and Drum Ensemble Unity in a community center. They are a very excellent example. The Kuumba family, in terms of the Locks Conference, Mama Kusawa and the Kuumba family, what they have been doing. Mama Maisha, in terms of the legacy of the Kwanzaa you know, tradition here in Philadelphia, the Ngoma. So these, all of these people I'm speaking with, we literally work with these people year long. So you will see us at their events, working, not just participating, but involved in what it is that they're doing. And they will be in our events, not just participating, but also working and collectively, you know, reaching a goal. So we just have to do more of that intentionally. We know that, you know, what we're going to do is going to, you know, impact others. Just by merely, I mean, when people see what it is that we're doing, they're going to be transformed, you know.
You know, and we're going to take a brief break, and we're going to add Professor Carl Tone Jones into this conversation. But, you know, Brother Ober, Brother Kamal, the answer to the question is basically what you men are already doing. The skill of being able to organize is really a skill. You have a lot of our people that have good ideas, and some of our people are good talkers and have good ideas, but they can't draw people to get involved in anything to save their life. But when you find a person that is good at organizing, whether it's a young person or even an older person that can pass on that skill to another, that makes a huge difference. Look at some of our people during our recent history, or whether you're talking about King, Malcolm, Medgar Evers, those men were organizers, and they were great at it, to the point where they had to be eliminated by powers that be. But that skill of organizing is the key to what we really need to do moving forward. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to add Professor Carl Tone Jones to this discussion. His documentary film, African Independence Day Project, has been, the Independence Day Project has been getting rave reviews. Brother Oba and Brother Kamal was at a private screening of the documentary that's going to be released soon, but I want him to come on and talk about this documentary to our listening audience. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can get involved in the conversation. We do have a couple callers on hold, and we'll get them involved. We can take a brief break. And when we, you know, coming back from break, I want to play a clip from a song that Amiri Baraka, his son Roz Baraka, is now the president of Newark, that he made in the late 60s. I wasn't aware of the song until I ran across it, but I want to share it with our listening audience because I think it's kind of apropos to not only the conversation that we're having, but the conversation that we're going to have. So after I play these commercial breaks, we'll go into the selection, and then we'll come back, and you can get involved in the conversation too by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard the special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
Who will survive America? Few Americans, very few Negroes, and no crackers at all. Who will survive America? Few Americans, very few Negroes, and no crackers at all.
Who will survive America? Very few Negroes, no crackers at all.
Survive America with your 20-cent habit, your throwback Jones. Will you survive in the heat and fire? Actual change, I doubt it. Will you survive, woman, or will your nylon wig catch a fire at midnight and light up Sterling Street and your ass prints on the pavement? Grease was melting in this brother's eyes. His profile was shot up by a Simba. Thinking who was coming around the corner was really Tony Curtis. And not a misguided brother got his mind hanging out with Italian. Who will survive America? The black future will. You can't with the fat stomachs between your ears. Scraping nickels out the inside of nigger daydreams. Few Americans, very few Negroes. Maybe no red. And blue lace. If she shrinks from blackness in front of the church, following the wedding of the yellow robots, will not survive. She's old anyway, and they're moving her church in the wind. Old people, no. Christians, no. First Negroes, be invisible to truth. 1944 Minnesota, no, no. Nothing of that will be anywhere. It will be burned clean. It might sink and steam up the sea. America might, and no Americans, very few Negroes will get out there. No crackers at all. No crackers at all. No crackers at all. No crackers, no crackers at all. But the black man will survive America. His survival will mean the death of America. Survive, black man. 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 Black woman, too. Survive, black man. Survive, black man. Survive, black man. Black woman, too. Black woman, too. Black woman. Let us all survive. Who needs to? Let us all survive. Let us all survive. Let us all survive. Who needs to? Okay, okay. We wish each other good luck.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. Who will survive America?
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host,
Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Who will survive America? What do you say? Very few Negroes and no crackers at all. Boy, let's use that to kind of segue into our next guest. Professor Carl Tone Jones is with us, the executive producer of the Independence Day Project. It's a documentary film. Professor Jones, are you with us?
Yes, sir. peace and blessings to you and the panel, beloved.
How are you, sir?
How you doing now?
Hey, I'm a little it's been a little bit of a whirlwind, so I'm getting up there in age, so I'm a little tired, but
everybody go play that card now.
Well, listen,
I'm feeling good though, brother. I'm feeling good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Listen, I heard some rave reviews of the upcoming documentary. I played that clip because I think it might, and Brother Ober can tell me if I'm wrong, I think it might kind of blend in to where we might be going when the question was asked, who will survive America? Very few Negroes and no crackers at all. You know, mm-hmm. That's talking definitely about a mindset and about a physical people, because we know that the mindset of a Negro was definitely an American invention. But talk about the project and what it really is. The floor is yours, brother.
Thank you. And thank you, Brother Oba, for, bridging this for us. Definitely appreciate that, brother. The Independence Day Project is a documentary that is sort of future spec. It speaks to the vision, the creative vision of what an independent Black and African communities looks like free of white supremacy. And once we create that image, then we start asking questions about, well, what do we have to do now to get to that community? What do we have to do now to get to that place? So, you have various scholars, community activists, community organizers, educators, people who are actually doing the work. We have a lot of them on the project, cultural innovators like, Brother Oba, and we ask those questions. And through the documentary, we walk through the situations and circumstances of our community in various different subject areas. And one of the, we loosely utilize Neely Fuller's Not Areas of Human Activity. I realized that, at some point in the cultivation of the project that we wouldn't be able to access all of them because then we'd be talking about a four-hour movie. But we went through the various stages of economics, culture. Well, we added culture, but economics, education, religion, spirituality. And we talked about the war and counter-war aspects of, Dr. Neely Fuller's Not Areas of Human Activity and the Compensatory Code Book in terms of what we need to be doing as the Black community to fight against the system of white supremacy. So through those areas, we have various people throughout the country, and they were able to contribute to the project. And I'm just thoroughly grateful for their contributions, because no one of us has the answer. Only together can we develop the answers to questions that many of us had not conceived. One of the reasons we came to the creation or the origins of this project was this was birthed out of the mouths of children. I would go into South Philadelphia High School for the past few years, and I was fortunate enough to get into a classroom with our children in it. And having that access and speaking to the children on a weekly basis, raise up the issues, raise up the questions and concerns, and this was no holds barred. Giving it to them straight like they need to hear it. Educating them on the system of white supremacy, educating them on how it does, the impact it has on our community, and specifically what the future looks like for them if we don't change things. So then they, you know, unlike us, where we would debate the, you know, the various different issues, they say, okay, well, what do we do? We got you. We understand. We see it all around us. We're dealing with this. We experience this. So what do we do? You know, and as I said last night, I was stuck because I was so married to the struggle that I hadn't considered the possibility of a victory. Hey, what do we do to get to that victory? What do we do to, you know, it's like we're married to the struggle of white supremacy as if this is going to be a never-ending battle and all empires fall. Well, what do we have to do to make this empire fall so that we can be great again? And so there, you know, that was the genesis of, you know, asking the question of, well, what does an independent black community free of white supremacy look like? And then what do we have to do to get there? I teach a class on creative leadership, and one of the books that is required text is a book by a European man by the name of Robert Frick, but it's called The Path of Least Resistance. And in reading that book, it's probably one of the most diabolical books I've ever read, but it speaks to not following the path of least resistance that's been created by the power structure to maintain order and control, but by creating your own creative path, you don't have to go through their channels to build and create a new solution for you. And through that paradigm, you know, I came to the conclusion that we need to stop beating our heads against this wall. Hello?
Yes. I got kind of caught up. Let me ask you a question, and I'm going to throw this out to the panel. And I want you, Brother Carl Tone Jones, to Professor Carl Tone Jones, to answer first. That paradigm that is going to be created, because I definitely believe that change is coming. That paradigm that's going to be created entails a lot of things, an educational system that's centered around our people, an economy that's centered around our people, and an political system that's centered around our people. We were talking earlier about the building blocks for an economic base locally when Brother Oba and Brother Kamal was talking about the marketplace. Now, I'm going to throw out an example because I want you men to talk about the role that politics plays in what we're talking about. And keep in mind that I'm not talking about our people running in the Democratic and Republican Party and playing this political game like Europeans. I'm not talking about that. I'll give an example, a little framework. We've had James Clingman and others on this show. They talked about in 2007 when they came up with a strategy and they chose Detroit to go there and pitch to them an Africatown project because an Africatown section of the city where black businesses would have a business hub because other nationalities have it in Detroit, Koreatown, Greek town. They got different nationalities with their own economic base in Detroit. Now, Detroit at that time was 83% black with no black economic hub. So they went to Detroit and pitched an Africatown project to them. Several folks were involved, Brother Amafika Gayuka, Claude Anderson, James Clingman, Bob Law, Rosie Milligan, others, other activists. And pitched it to the power structure at that time. It was turned down. I think they had two council people that was in favor of it, and the rest of it, including the mayor at that time, I think he's sitting up in jail now, Kwame Kirkpatrick, they all turned it down, said it was racist, and they couldn't do it. They couldn't back the project. They had the political clout to do it. They chose not to do it. Now, we had a brother on from Seattle, a brother Richard, a brother Joaquin Garrett, that talked about Seattle and an area of Seattle that's been that our people have lived in since the turn of the 20th century, early 20th century. In fact, the young man, his grandfather or great grandfather had the first bank in Seattle, Black Bank. So he came up with an Africatown project. Different grassroots folks came together, nailed down some planks that they wanted to use, and went to the politicians there and demanded that money be allocated for this project. They managed to get it done. In fact, we got to get him on to an update, but their groundbreaking was in June. He sent me some schematics of different things that was going to be involved, cultural center, things like that. It was going to be another Black bank there. But now I'm looking at that as a form of African-centered politics, something that we can use while we're here. Talk about in your mind, in your vision, how politics is going to play in what you're talking about.
Hello?
Yes. No, go ahead. Professor okay. Jones.
Okay. One of the things, and going back to that idea, because I'm familiar with the Africatown project in Detroit.
Okay.
And one of the areas I think that the error was, they went in with a beautiful plan, by the way. The plan was pretty much flawless, except for the fact that their politicians weren't already sitting in those seats. So they pretty much, and we know that we have Black gatekeepers in those political systems, and they're sitting in the seats to prevent, you know, that Boulé class to prevent us from infringing on their trinkets or their particular privilege so they can maintain and uphold the power structure that's already there. So one of the things I would, you know, and this is an idea that we've been proposing and putting out there. And I'm kind of like closed on this because I don't want to say too much, but I think we need to start focusing more so on places that have been deserted. You know, places like, you know, we were in Mississippi, myself, Brother Mitchell Chance, were in Mississippi talking about the Independence Day Project this past summer. And the township that we were in, you know, was 90% Black, you know, and one of the things we were talking about, we were looking at all of the abandoned, you know, infrastructure, all of the raw space, all of the fresh greenery that, you know, acres where Black people own thousands of acres, but it wasn't cultivated because they couldn't afford to do anything with the land.
Mm-hmm.
And we were looking at, you know, going to places like that where you can actually build Black power structures. You could take over whole townships. And literally take over the political landscape because All you have to do is put your politicians in office in those particular areas. And then you can run your commerce through them and get your grants and get the zoning, you know, all the zoning permits and things of that nature. And you can create, you know, African towns all throughout. And you can do it in relative seclusion because there's miles in between each town where if you're not in that town, you don't really know what's going on. One town doesn't really see what's going on. So you can build it, and with the discreetness, discreet nature that we need, because understand what we're up against, and I know you're all familiar with what we're up against. You know, every single thing that threatens this power structure is met with force. And the dominant society, they're currently in a wartime, you know, position right now. So everything that represents a threat, they're attacking full force, and their cronies that lie amongst us, their collaborators that lie amongst us, are the main contributors or the main ones that will throw monkey wrenches in any type of township or any type of empowerment program we put together.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, creating those situations, we have to create our politicians,
yes,
for one.
Yes.
Put our politicians in those seats so that when those politicians know when we bring these ideas to them, it's already a done deal. And therefore, that way we can go ahead and build it because, as you said, if they remove the obstacles, we can build these economic centers, these black power centers. I don't like to use the term Black Wall Street because the connotation with Wall Street. And also, the history of Wall Street is not really told in terms of what actually took place. So in regards to that, so I like to call them black economic centers or black boom towns is what we like to call them.
Mm-hmm.
And we can create them through that vision, and we can empower, because you think about it, the Europeans are coming back to the major cities. They want these major cities. So you're fighting gentrification. You're fighting reallocation. You're fighting, you know, shrinkage gentrification where they're like what's going on in Flint. They want these areas that's close by water raising, but they're abandoning whole townships, the middle of the middle states, as you will. They're abandoning them. And these are places we can pick up and go, relocate, and sort of, you know, like maroon societies. We can create our own maroon societies, hiding in plain sight while we build our power up.
Riloba, Brother Gamal?
Yes, sir. I'll be honest with you. I'm very rare at a loss for words, but I'm very much at a loss for words. I think that Brother Carl summed it up very succinctly.
Okay.
I'm totally in agreement with what Brother Carl just added. My thing is, and I know that you and I were talking a little bit earlier, Brother Elliot, today. My thing is that with that strategy that we go into this whole thing with, we have to keep in mind, not fear. It's not a thing about fear at all. It's been past fear as far as Africans are concerned. But the fact of in this matrix that we live in, has a way of adjusting to the various different strategies in which we go about doing things as Africans on a political level. As you know, when we talked earlier today, I'm not much of a man for politics, but at the same time, though, and like you said, it's not about getting in to change what already exists. It's about utilizing what exists to benefit us in a way in which we don't have to totally invest in it.
Okay.
To bring about the change that we need. But I would just say this, that, when we do adjust the strategy and anything like that, how do we counteract the adjustment? You know, because they're going to, it's a chess game. So my thing is that, what is our plan B, our plan C, our plan D, once they are able to adjust and, modify what it is that we're doing to try to counteract our efforts. That's my only thing.
Brother Richard, I want you to kind of weigh in there, but let me take this call. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard and the guests, good evening. This is Marcus from Memphis, God.
How are you, Marcus?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great, good brothers. You know what the professor just said, it sounds good and sound great if the cracker would leave us alone. that's the thing that we didn't interject in that. If the cracker would leave us alone, we could do it. But you know the cracker ain't gonna leave us alone to do it, especially here in America. You see, he has no intention of letting black people, especially in America, get in the toothhole. Okay? We saw that from the Tulsa. We have never been able to replicate Tulsa from that time. Never. See? He has no intention of letting us replicate that. Yeah, they may move to the city. No, but 30 years from now, they're going to come back. And you know what? We need this place again. We need here. And find some way to keep us moving, keep us shuffling all across this country. You know? We have 12 million square miles of land over there in the other part of the world where it's our legitimate homeland. Okay? That is our legitimate, you know? So we need to reclaim that and build that. We're not going to solve your problem here in America. 400 years is long enough to know. See, if we could have, you know, anybody could have worked out any human relationship in 400 years. You know, they have no intention of working out anything honorable with black people. You know, not on this side of the ocean, unless we're going to destroy the place. You know, we're talking about, you know, then you're talking something else now. You know, but apart from that, try to live beside this homicidal mania, this megalomania, this kleptomania. Hell no. You know, so, you know, again, you know, we need to look at it, you know. Yes, as you say, this thing is collapsing. But look, we got to remember now, you know, they may be fighting amongst themselves, but when it comes to us, they get together. When it comes to dealing with us, they are on the same page. Yeah, they may be squabbling with each other, but, you know, so, you know, we really, really, really need to make a 180 degrees turn and go get our power base, where our power base is. You see, this is not our power base. You know, we were bought here and used as tools, you know, and, you know, just trying to get along with this madman. Man, this man is sick, you know, and he's heaping up a lot of coal. And then we hanging out with him. So whenever fire come on him, he's going to drop on us too. We should try to get some distance between us and him. You see, because the world tired of him now. I'm telling you. We are the ones actually holding this place up, you know. You know, but the world is tired of him. Anyway, you take care, good brother. Thank you.
Brother Marcus, before you leave, let me ask you something. In your analogy, of what you're saying, and I don't have no disagreement with what you're saying. Do you see where some type of political relationship is necessary? Now, keep in mind, when I keep on using the term political, I'm not talking about this foolishness that we see all the time, or even anything resembling a Democratic or Republican party. But do you see where a political relationship is necessary to even develop that type of, and I'll use Marcus Garvey, when he tried to develop a political relationship between the continent and here, where our people could have a repatriation back to the continent. Mm-hmm. So do you see where it's necessary to develop some type of political relationship?
It's a necessity.
Okay.
It is a necessity. You know, and look, if we have to shoot our way into Africa, you know what I'm saying? You know, if we got to shoot our way in there, because that is our home, okay? You know? So, but it's so confusing because some of them in Africa, they're trying to get out of there to come here, okay? So, you know, it's a whole bunch of confusion. But look, we know that Africa is the prize. You know, we in this part of the Western Hemisphere know, because we have had a lot of, we know the cracker more than anybody else, because we've been living beside. In fact, the world wonder how the hell you live beside this homicidal maniac and you come out laughing and singing. You know, you're really a mystery to the world. You're really, you know, sitting here with him, you know, and come out shining still. So we are exceptional people, you know, but you know, the time is a ticking now. Time is a ticking. And as I said, you know, whatever, the world is getting sick and tired of him. And whatever going to drop on him, he's going to drop on us too. You see, so we got to make some decisions quick, fast, and in a hurry. You take care, brother.
Thank you for your call, sir. Let's go to Newport News. Newport News? He must have stepped away. Let's go to 347. 347? 347 error code. 347.
How you doing, bro? I just called in. I'm not too, I just called in, I swear. So I don't know what the topic is. I was just trying to pick up on what you guys are talking about. And I heard the brother speaking, saying Africa was the prize and things of that nature. That's as far as I've heard. And I didn't really agree with him, but I don't really know the context of the conversation.
Well, you want to listen a little bit more and then join conversation? I'll put you on hold.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely.
All right. Let's go to 646. 646.
Hey, what's happening, brother Elliot, and to your guest house, everybody, this lovely evening tonight?
Great, great. How are you, sir?
Is my brother Richard there? Relax.
Yes. The brothers, though, have stimulated me. Brothers Jones' film, the Independence Day Project, is like right in line with my thinking and asking the question, what if I'm not mistaken, what do our future look like for us to answer? So I'm relaxed.
Well, you know, our future, you know, looks totally different from some than others, man, because, you know, with some of the crazy things that we do, it seems like it comes back to bite us in the behind, because the great new savior, the white boy, Doug Jones, it seems like he's now gonna, you know, converse with the Republicans. Now, I know 90% of them Negroes in Alabama ain't vote for that Urugu to go in there and talk about he's gonna converse with Republicans and think about voting with Republicans. So now my question becomes, could the Negro have been hoodwinked again? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Because, you know, the reality is this, and I've asked this question, and, you know, nobody wants to answer it. Yes, he prosecuted those that were not convicted for the bombing of Birmingham girls when he was the district attorney. But how many of our people did he unjustly put in jail? And how many of our people did he over-prosecute? And how many of our people did he do all sorts of egregious things to? You know, none of that stuff has come out in the wash yet. Nobody's talking about that. You know, what is his true relationship in regards to our people and the treatment of our people? Now, here it is. 90% of us voted for him. I want to know how many of them Negroes go get jobs on his staff. So if he got a 20-member staff, what do y'all think should be a fair amount of Negroes that should be on the staff?
Well, listen, I'm not even going to deal with the part about the staff. I'm going to deal with the part about what we're talking about in relation to what you just raised. Now, what you just raised is a perfect example of what we don't need to be doing anymore. You know, Doug Jones and that other guy that he was running against is, and I used a term that a caller, Brother Ralph, used last week, two wings of the same bird. I mean, one guy was an open racist and let you know that he said he wished he could go back to the period of enslavement. And the other guy is no better. But they used a type of boogeyman philosophy on black folks, saying if you vote for this guy, you're voting for an open racist and a pedophile, which he is. So black folks, 90% plus, voted for his opponent and consider it a victory. They didn't go to him with any planks or any demands, not asking any demands. Now, we talked last week about Lowndes County, Alabama. Lowndes County is a historic spot for African Americans because that's where Charles Cobb and Stokely Carmichael went down there and started that Freedom Now. Is it right, Richard? Freedom Now Party?
I can't even think of it. The New Freedom Organization.
Yeah, it was a Black Independent Party. Mm-hmm. That's where it was started at and rallied all those folks. White folks is very vindictive. So now we see now that the UN went down there and said that they never seen conditions in the first world like down in Lowndes County. where raw sewage is pouring in to all these people's homes. Now, they had politicians in the area, and they were black, telling about these conditions need to be, something need to be done about it. They interviewed other politicians, happened to be white, says, well, you're talking about rural areas, and they're not in the urban areas, so it's not our responsibility to repair it. But the sewage is not coming from them. It's pouring into the county from outside of the county. Now, all it is, the UN coming in and say, oh, whoa, look at these conditions. But if black folks was going to vote for this clown that they just voted for and consider it a victory, why wasn't that on the planks of demands? We demand that these conditions in Lowes County be taken care of before we vote for your ass.
Can I tell you why? People,
they got to stop being fools to this man's system.
Can I tell you why?
Go ahead.
Can I honestly tell you why? Because the Negro peen, which were the ones who voted for this cracker, don't give a damn about everyday poor black folks. That's why.
Well, you're probably right.
If all truth be told, that's why. They don't identify with the blacks in Loudoun County. Because, see, they done been able to evolve themselves out of Loudoun County and into other municipalities. You know what I'm saying? So they don't think about that. So that's not even on their agenda. Their thing is they want to hold their position.
But, Jay, hold on.
That is what the problem is.
Hold on one second. Who is that, Brother Oba or Brother Kamal?
No, I didn't really have anything to say. I was just, you know, just kind of like going over what the brother was saying.
Okay. Professor Jones, Carl Tone Jones, your opinion you know, what's been stated by the caller from New York.
Oh, I agree with him in regards to, you know, we have a lot of Negroes in our community with bougie aspirations. They have boule aspirations where they want to be a part of the, you know, they want to be reformers. They want to, you know, a brother in Harlem Liberation School. They had a class in Harlem Liberation School a few days ago, my brother Ajay Tayemba. And one of the brothers, I believe the name is Brother Issa, stated that we have a lot of angry black militants, but the black militants are really just militant integrations. And what you see is a lot of militancy, you know, angry rhetoric, but mostly it's about integration, finding ways to reform this system rather than break free of it. And we find a lot of that specifically with the go to vote crowd all the time. And specifically, when you look at our conditions where they get the minions to utilize fear, so they don't have to offer us anything. At the Democratic Convention here in Philadelphia, when Hillary Clinton was running for president, they received strict instructions not to adhere to any matters concerning the black community. And that memo was leaked. This is an open secret. So nothing has changed then, nothing has changed now. And so now even the sister that just got elected down in Atlanta, she's talking about her first order of business is increasing the police department.
Yeah.
You know, increasing the police force. So none of these actions are happening. You know, all these victories that black people were claiming, you know, over the past few weeks have turned out to be symbolic victories, symbolic gestures. And usually what ends up happening is we get the short end of the stick. We don't get any political gain. We don't get any access to wealth or resources. And they turn a blind eye to it. But because they can put a black face, or because they can give us a messiah such as the messiah figure such as a Doug Jones, you know, it's all right. And we have become those of us who have become critical to that particular situation have become pariah in our own homes, in our own communities, because the propaganda is sold back to us.
If I could say something real quick on that,
Go ahead.
You know, yeah, we have become we've truly, and it's something that you and I discussed earlier today as well, Brother Elliot. We've actually allowed for ourselves to become pariah. You know what I'm saying? We've allowed for ourselves to become used in a political football to in some way allow for candidates to get in. Like,
one of the reasons, like I said, the whole Doug Jones thing is a joke, because the reason why black folks came out in numbers to put him in was because the Republican candidate was Trump's boy. That's it. And Doug Jones promising the things that he promised black people when he won his election in Alabama and things of that nature. We both know, we all know on this phone, we ain't getting nothing out of that. You know what I mean?
But what
we
did he
put
promise
ourselves
us?
In that position. Just as much as they want us to be in that position, we have to be responsible and hold ourselves accountable for putting ourselves in that position. So what Brother Carl is saying is exactly right.
Okay.
But my first question to you, my brother, is what did he promise us? Because I didn't hear no promise or nothing.
Well, I heard a couple of people, especially black, especially some of our sisters, and I ain't saying all. I'm not making no generalization. I'm just saying a few comments that I heard from some sisters and anything like that talked about the reason why they was going to vote for Doug Jones and that, you know, he promised jobs and different things. You know, the same old rhetoric that most conventional politicians come out with, especially when it comes to us.
Bro, let me say this, and let's be very, very clear. Most of these black women, if they are not at the side of the right man, they worse than white women. Seriously, I mean, let's be clear, because they have an agenda that's based on surviving and getting closer to the sky daddy and the daddy. They not thinking about liberating African people.
No, I don't want to. I don't agree with that, Jay.
I'm gonna finish the point. The point is this: the majority of black women today are trying to infiltrate into European culture and European cultural behavior. Not all of them, so let me clear that up. Not all
right,
of them.
Right,
but
right.
A large percentage. A large percentage of them are. Not all of them. I apologize. I should use some of them. And the point of the matter is that when they do this, it causes the kind of conflict that you have now with people like Roy, like Doug Jones, coming into the midst of the community and using them and giving them crumbs, and in the process, others get nothing in return. Others are left behind, and we as a community on the whole are not moving forward. But whenever you have strong sisters like the sisters in Philadelphia that started the Million More Movement, or you have a sister that started, I think it's Me Too or something like that movement, they always cast aside by the feminists. You know what I'm saying? They're never put up in the forefront to articulate anything that's really African. They always put as being, just like you said, a pariah, or seen as someone that got these crazy ideas and crazy notions on the direction that we should go. And in the process, as a collective, we still stuck in the same box as a people, never really moving forward and fighting for crumbs. And it's just a continuous vicious cycle. And that's something that we need to address. But let me leave you with this one last thing. Now think about this, fellas. This brother, who's a brother from back in the 60s, right, who's been involved in the movement. I'm not gonna say his name, but he wrote this on Facebook in a reply to someone that asked him in regards to what do you get from the political process, and he said, "This is about life and death. It's no game. I once heard Attorney at War Automatic repeat something his transitional, saintly, and mother of the movement wife, Lenora, godmother, once said, if black people were birds, we'll fly in reverse. We are repeating lessons supposedly learned since Booker T. Washington, Alabama Day. Listen up. Confrontation could lead to disaster for us outnumbered blacks and cooperation with supportive whites is the only way to overcome racism in the long run.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's saying basically that if we confront white people for the dastardly deeds that they've done to us without it being an affiliation in the backing and the approval of white folks, then it's just going to be a total disaster, and we shouldn't even think about doing it.
Yeah, well,
now, do that make sense? Do that make sense to you?
He's part of the problem. He's not the solution, whoever it is.
Well, all I'm going to say is this. Thank y'all, brothers, for the good work that y'all do. And we just got to figure this thing out, man, because if you have a situation to where as they could now bump off someone on an allegation like Tavis Smiley, who I have issues with, and promote a coach against Cornel West in an argument over Barack Obama, we in a lot of trouble, man. If that's what's important to our community, and you have allegations with no receipts or anything could destroy somebody like a Tavis Smiley, I just want to know who's going to be next, man. Because you notice everyone, and I mean, I have issues with Tavis, but I do say this, the man did some decent work. Everyone that was behind him just left him like that. And the black community gonna leave him just like they want a bad mouth and bad talk Omarosa, who, yeah, we have some issues with. But you know something? Omarosa tried. She tried to make somewhat of a difference. She tried to put some people at the table. You know what I'm saying? But because it wasn't the Democrats at the head of it and they wasn't the lead, she's one of the worst black women in the world. But nobody looked at the decent things that she's done in the history that she's done. But then you'll have some lesbian woman like a Robin Robbins say, by Felicia, and the other women bad talker, and it's all good. Have a good night, brothers.
Peace. All right, Jay. Go look at your picture of Omarosa that's on the wall.
let me say, if I may,
go ahead, Richard.
I think, brother Carl Jones, your documentary, The Independence Day Project, really lifts us out of that quagmire that in the exchange. And I think, Elliot, to the question that you raised, where I think, you know, from my thinking of where I haven't seen it yet, but just looked at some of the clips and the interviews Brother Carl has been involved in around this project. And because you are from Philadelphia, I think it's important to recognize that when we're talking about politics, it does relate to what we talked about earlier when we were talking about building an economy, because it to me, it relates to not necessarily the political machine, the American nation state political machine, but our political relationships with each other to deal with the interacting of developing, institutionalizing how we're going to deal with the scarce resources and building infrastructure of independence. And Brother Jones, you raised an example of Mississippi, right, and the farm area. And Elliot, you had been working with farmers, I believe that was in North Carolina, also, and around the issue of not having a lot of having this land, but not enough individuals to actually be a part of cultivating that land. That's a political issue. That's a labor issue. That's something that we have to develop, right? And that's not something that's going to be developed out of the electoral politics of the American nation state, but it does have to be developed within the political governance of Black people as we talk about what our independence will be. So for you, Brother Carl, the question I had is, as you went around and were interviewing for this documentary, how many people put a, because I've raised the question, but what was the time frame that they seen, if anybody spoke to, that they seen this independence being? And if I understood the framing of your question that you were asking for this documentary, did anybody give a sense of what they perceive this can happen? Because what I hear a lot of us talk about, that it can happen, or that we're stuck with what we got in relationship to the system of white supremacy, and all we can do is deal with the machinations that they give us and the miscalculations of some people who have bought into it. So did anybody speak to what that independence, if not only what it looked like, but when did they see it occurring?
We had various responses. That's a great question, by the way. We had various responses from the people that were members of the panel in the project. Some saying that we couldn't be, didn't see it happen in our lifetime. Others reflecting to the colonial struggles of this country and when it occurred. Excuse me, I'm sorry. One of the main things I look at is when you talk about revolution, a lot of us aren't really students of history. Revolutions, when you start talking about revolutions and building communities, things of that nature, the actual revolution itself is a very, very fast-moving event. It's not something that takes, you know, several different lifetimes. Building communities and building empires takes lifetimes. But to put our people in a place where that revolutionary struggle is going to take place, or that revolutionary battle is taking place to obtain that revolutionary war reward, that is something I see happening very soon, because the conditions are going to warrant for it. And I also see it happening within our lifetime. You got to remember, the American Revolution was fought and won within a 4 to 6 year period. You know, you had the, you know, 13 colonies, 3%, excuse me, of 13 colonies who manned up and warred upon the greatest, at that time, military might, greatest empire of that time, the British Armada, the British Empire. So in looking at what we need to do in terms of obtaining, you know, an independent community, getting those places, getting to those places that we need to do, you know, these are things that can happen relative in a relative short time. I'm planning on seeing it within my lifetime. I'm planning on seeing it within the next few years, specifically if we spark and change the mindset. The mindset is the first thing. The propaganda is the first step. And this is the main purpose behind the project, is to get us off of what they won't let us do, what they won't allow us to do, and say, we're going to be out here doing this ourselves, and to be damned with anybody else. And not only are we talking about building communities, but we're also talking about building ways to protect those communities. So this is not a soft shoe process where we're going to tippy toe around afraid to crush a few eggshells. No, this is a process where we're talking about, you know, going into those places, liberating ourselves, you know, various different ways. And in terms of liberations, and not only taking that, it's not, because it's not going to just be farmland. We're also talking about industrializing that land so that we can ourselves, you know, create these the business centers that we need, the cultural centers that we need, and the infrastructure. So you say in Philadelphia, so we are in Philadelphia, you have, let's say we have some out of 100,000 unemployed people right now of our community, Black people, African people. Well, if you have several different places across the country where you need to cultivate, well, these brothers and sisters are unemployed. We're going to send them to those regions because, geographically speaking, we can't keep being, we can't allow ourselves to be tied to a specific location. The community is the people, not the area in which the people are congregating at that time. You know, so when the people move, the community moves with them. And that's one of the things, you know, one of the aspects of you know, talking about an independent black community. I'm not loyal to the city of Philadelphia. I'm loyal to the Africans who live in Philadelphia. The city itself, I have no ties to, you know, no binds to. So wherever we have to go to make that community possible is where we'll go. And if we have to go on our migration to get to that place, then that's the mess. That's the thing we have to do. We have to take the initiative to do it ourselves and not to be concerned about obstacles that are going to be put in our way. And we also have to change our mindset, because from what I'm hearing from a lot of brothers and sisters, they're angry, but it's from a place of victimhood. And really, we can't be walking around here as victims, hoping and praying that eventually this European is going to feel some type of sympathy towards us. It's not in their nature. So we have to come out this understanding that we talk about this in the movie, war has been declared on our community. They are dealing with us in a wartime stance. Mm-hmm. They, everything you talk about, the rapper Black Thought was trending on Twitter because, you know, he put together a magnificent verse. And for those of us who have known Black Thought, you know, Black Thought's been doing this for 20 years. You know what I'm saying? But some people. But it's trending. And the white supremacists are all over Twitter right now. But what if we had white thought? You know, and we're looking at it disingenuously, talking about, well, they're idiots for even considering, you know, that this is an idea, not a person. No, they are attacking anything that speaks to black empowerment, any microbe that thinks that speaks to black empowerment, because they recognize that every inch we gain is an inch that they lose. And then, so they understand the concept of being at war in wartime fervor. We're the ones that are still, like, touchy with that. A cognitive dissonance kicks in, that white supremacist behind weapons they've been putting on us for the last several centuries kicks in, and then we start backing off of our stance, and we start softening our stance, even though we come to it with, you know, militancy. It's a reluctant militancy. Like, we have to be literally forced to speak this into existence.
You know, before we take a break, let me call 347. Join the conversation. Call a three.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What's your name, brother?
By the way, Thomas Smith. I'm from New York.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that I've been listening to what your brother is saying. You're saying some great things. I did kind of agree with the brother, because what I think what they did, when Omarosa came out and I watched her interview, I believe it was with the dude who used to play with the Giants, the straight hand. She said that, being the only black woman in this administration, well, I got a lot of things I want to say, because some of the things I heard and they were saying around me was, man, wait until y'all hear it. And instead of these black women harping on, we want to hear what they were saying, they automatically now were just, you know, ripping her to pieces. And I think that's counterproductive, because it's very rarely that we get a black person or a white person, especially a white person, but a black person who's privy to some of those conversations that white people have when we're not around. And I think those would be it would have been very good for them to try to entice her to give us some snippets from some of those things and name some names of these people that said these things. With the thing down in Alabama, I'm not an advocate for black people voting. I believe that we have in the 9 areas, 10 areas of people activity. Those are the 10 areas that we need to be not participating in this system, because and I always use Baltimore as a prime example. When you had the Freddie Gray case, you had a black mayor, black prosecutor, a black judge, a black chief of police, a black, almost a black jury. I mean, you had everything black and everything went wrong, because it doesn't matter where you put black people at in a system of white supremacy. The system is systemically going to work the way it works. So when I saw the reports the week prior to the election with the UN down there, and as you were speaking, and just to say the hookworm problem alone, a parasite that these kids are getting in their feet. This stuff is coming up in their homes, through their tubs, through their toilets, you know, getting into these kids' feet. It attaches to your small intestine. It sucks out the blood. It causes birth defects. I mean, small stunted child growth. It
causes mental problems. And this is what these people are living in. And these are career politicians you're voting for, so you can't tell me they didn't know. Because I pulled up a report from the 1990s, and this problem would have been able to be fixed for $20 to $50 million. I think that it would have been much better for the black media to go down there and point some of this stuff out, and let's do a crowdfunding campaign to get up to $30, $40 million ourselves so we could get our own septics, you know, help our own people out, because they can't depend on this white politician system. It's not going to work for them ever, because this is a white supremacist system, and that's the only thing it's going to work for. Any black politician in it is just upholding that system, whether they know it or not. So I didn't advocate for that at all. And as for the future of black people, that question, was that one of the questions that you asked, my brother?
Yeah, well, it wasn't really a question. We were just commenting on some of the...
Then I'll leave it alone, because I was going to get into some technology. I'll leave it alone, and thank you for taking my call.
Hey, thank you, brother, for your call. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll spend a few more minutes before the end of the program with our guest. You all right, Richard?
Yeah, I'm good.
Good. We'll take a brief break, and when we come back, you can still got some time to join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother Oba is with us. Brother Kamal from the African Independence Day Organizing Committee, and also Professor Carl Tone Jones, the producer of the Independence Day Project documentary film. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
New age is upon us, and yet the past refuses to rest in its shallow grave. For those who hide behind the false image of the Son of Man shall stand before God, 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 God. It has begun, the beginning of the end. Yeah. Voice of racism preaching the gospel is devilish. A fake church called the prophet Muhammad a terrorist. Forgetting God is not religion, but a spiritual bond. And Jesus is the most quoted prophet in the Quran. They bombed innocent people trying to murder Saddam. When you gave them those chemical weapons to go to war with Iran. This is the information that they hold back from Peter Jennings. Cause Condoleezza Rice is just a new age Sally Hemings. I break it down with critical language and spiritual anguish. The Judas I hang with, the guilt of betraying Christ. Who murdered him, stole his religion, and painted him white. Translated in psychologically tainted philosophy. Conservative, political, right-wing ideology. Glued together sloppily, the blasphemy of a nation. Got my back to the wall, cause I'm facing assassination. Guantanamo Bay, federal incarceration. How could this be? The land of the free, home of the brave. Indigenous Holocaust and the home of the slaves. Corporate America dancing offbeat to the rhythm. You really think this country never sponsored terrorism? Human rights violations, we continue the saga. El Salvador and the Contras and Nicaragua. And on top of that, you still want to take me to prison. Just cause I won't trade humanity for patriotism. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain. Suggestive thinking causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view of the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government wants us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality. Fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Read about the history of the place that we live in. And stop letting corporate news tell lies to your children. Flow like the blood of Abraham through the Jews and the Arabs. Broken apart like a woman's heart abused in the marriage. The brink of holy war bottled up like a miscarriage. Embedded correspondence don't tell the source of the tension. And they refuse to even mention European intervention. Or the massacres in Jenine, the innocent screams. U.S. manufactured missiles and M16s. Weapon contracts and corrupted American dreams. Media censorship blocking out the video screens. A continent of oil kingdoms bought for a bargain. Democracy is just a word when the people are starving. The average citizen made to be blind to the reason. A desert full of genocide where the bodies are freezing. And the world doesn't believe that you're fighting for freedom. Cause you fucked the Middle East and gave birth to a demon. It's open season with the CIA bugging my crib. Trapped in a ghetto region like a Palestinian kid. Where nobody gives a fuck whether you die or you live. I'm trying to give the truth and I know the price is my life. But when I'm gone they'll sing a song about immortal technique. Who beheaded the president and the princes and sheiks. You don't give a fuck about us. I can see through your facade like a fallen angel standing in the presence of God. Bitch nigga scared of the truth when it looks at you hard. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain. Suggestive thinking causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view in the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government want us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality. Fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Martial law is coming soon to the hood to kill yo while you hanging your flag out your project window. Yeah.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're headed down the home stretch of the program this evening, and with our special guest that had been joining us tonight, Brother Oba, Brother Kamal of the African Independence Day Organizing Committee, and Professor Carl Tone Jones, executive producer of the Independence Day Project, is with us. brothers, let me ask you a question. And it kind of deals with the selection was just made, played. And it also deals with the subject of independence. I checked out the documentary 1804 a couple of weeks ago. And it talked about the four players that was involved in our people gaining independence down in Haiti. The first one that they talked about in the documentary was McIndall, that seen that the collaborator was dangerous to any move for independence. The reason I'm mentioning that is a couple of callers mentioned Omarosa. Now, she's seen that the conversation that was being had in the White House dealing with black folks, that it was so upsetting to her. It was only upsetting when they pulled a rug out from under and threw her out of that position, and she went from the master's house kicking and screaming. All of a sudden, it's a need to curry favor because you want to come back to the black community because you're black, you're not white. That's been a pattern of black folks that have, that the rug has been pulled, the cover has been pulled off. They have been collaborators with white supremacy, and they always manage to come back because they know that our community will basically welcome them back with open arms. If you're talking about, or if we're talking about a system or bringing in a new age of independence and sovereignty for our people, it's necessary that we come up with a way or ways to deal with collaborators. I want the panel's opinion in reference to that. Professor Jones, you can go first.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, some things I'm not going to say, but
I understand.
One thing is.
No, I know. I do understand. Say, no, go ahead.
Okay. So one of the things is we have to start being more rigid with traitors to our community. That means we can't always, we're too forgiving, and it's in our nature, and it's one of the reasons why we've been able to persevere under prosecution and persecution, you know, within this current power structure. So, but we're too forgiving, and one of the things we need to stop doing is forgiving those who turned their backs onto us. You know, once you leave the community, it's a one-way trip. There's no coming back. And we need to close the door on these people when they try to come back. You know, these collaborators are dangerous.
Yes.
They set us up. They are never, you know, they still have that thing in them that wishes to be amongst their worshipable masters. So we can't allow for them back in our spaces. We can't allow for them gracefully to come back in our spaces. Omarosa, Stephen A. Smith, you know, they can't come back home. They shouldn't be allowed back home. You know, sometimes, and depending on the state of our community, and at times, we have to, you know, excite that a little bit. And what I mean is, if we were more prevalent, I'd rather have seen, if we had to take a choice in terms of who was going to lose their life, I'd rather the collaborator that caused Fred Hampton to lose his life to have been dealt with before it got to that point. I would have rather the collaborators that allow for Malcolm X to be murdered to have been dealt with before it got to that point.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to speak it like that. You know, I understand that we're dealing with the whole black identity extremist situation. So we have to be, mindful of the things we say, but in terms of how we would deal with those who collaborate, there's no coming back. There's no allowing them to regain their place in our community. That bridge has been burned and the ground has been salted to never be fertile again.
Brother Kamal, did you want to weigh in on that?
Oh, yes, sir.
I just want to say hi. I didn't acknowledge my brother Kamal, and I apologize for that, brother Kamal. Peace and blessings.
Peace, what's going on, Paul? What's going on, brother? I'm in total alignment with brother Carl. Traitors, or should I call, say, race traitors, need to be dealt with. And they need to be dealt with amongst us. You know, we don't need to call in no outside entity or so-called authority to handle our business with people who betray the race. They're betraying every African man, every African woman, and every African child. They are leaving us vulnerable and susceptible to attack. And no one person is bigger than the community. They have to be dealt with accordingly in any means and fashion that has to be done. I mean, I'm not going to tiptoe around this question. I'm going to come straight at it, you know, because this is long overdue. I mean, we got some people now that amongst us that need to be dealt with, period. You know what I mean? And if I had it my way, you know what I'm saying? They would have been dealt with, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, really ain't nothing stopping me. But at the same time, you understand that, you know, the type of environment and the type of things that are going on at this particular time. And it almost, in many senses, in dealing with them, it speaks to what Brother Carl was talking about earlier about, you know, the declaration of war on the black community and the identification of those individuals who are standing up against this attack. It speaks to the whole idea of what, you know, we were talking about a few weeks ago, Professor and I were talking about the whole idea of the black identity extremists. And that's some issue we need to talk about, you know, maybe the opportunity to come back on your show, Brother Elliot, because I think that is very, very, very important that we talk about that. But that's nothing but repackagement, meaning that the idea of black identity extremists has been repackaged. It's old hat. It's mm-hmm. just a different title on it. That's all. But I would like to talk about that in the future with you, possibly.
Okay.
But getting back to what it is that we were talking about, yeah, anybody that that causes an indignation or is at fault or leaves our community vulnerable, violates the principles and the ideas of our community, especially in establishing an independent community free of white supremacy and anything, needs to be handled. I totally agree with that, 110%.
Brother Kamal, I mean, if they spoke your sentiments, I mean, it's not necessary.
Yeah. I'm definitely in line with the sentiment.
Okay.
I mean, you know, the sister is useless. She's pretty much useless. If anything, we can use her as an example for others, you know, to direct them in a way in which to not go that route, you know. You know, we got to really stay clear of individuals like her. Is there many, and there will be many more. But, you know, what we're doing is so serious and it's so important, and we really have to be critical with those that we work with. It's just that important. We are on a mission, and this mission is based off of principle. And, you know, we can't have others, you know, jeopardizing what it is that we have to accomplish.
Yeah, I just thought it was, you know, I just figured I'd mention that because, you know, if you work with open racists and white supremacists, and these people don't even try to hide it. Sure, you got other white folks who try to hide it, try to act like they're liberals, but they're the same as the rest of their brethren. But then you got some that just straight out let you know their feelings. And if you work with them, you are a part of their administration, and they throw you out. you always got the potential to lay a wound to your people. So you, a person like that can't be trusted, period. You can't trust him. You know, it's kind of ironic that the same week that she got ushered out of the White House, that Charles Barkley went down to Alabama, and he was working to get this guy, Jones, in office. Now, this is the same guy that was a Republican and wanted to run for governor of Alabama as a Republican. He went down there and made a statement talking about, we got to realize we're black 365 days a year. What? I mean, come on.
He's another one.
Yeah, exactly.
He shouldn't be left back home.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I've seen one of the interviews that she had. You know, I wonder if she's going to be totally forthcoming or if she's just positioning herself for benefit. That's what I feel.
Oh,
like.
Yeah, most definitely. You know? I agree with the latter.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. So, you know, I mean, she's phony. And, you know, we know who they are, along with Charles Barkley. I mean, these people are, you know, they're laughable, they're, you know. So.
And we have to be really careful in bringing them in relationship to your documentary, Brother Jones, and the question you raised, Elliot. We have to be really careful in bringing them into our analysis, because it's a given that class, that group, that community of people have decided to support white supremacy. And they come in various colors as far as my framework, or at least I'm a projected as a framework. You know, they come in, but they, since the beginning, since John Locke even said that African people, we have declared war on African people to justify slavery, that there's been Africans who have been in line, lockstep, and as you say, collaborate or default Negroes who have been lockstep in collaborating with white supremacy. So we have to be careful, because in this age, that projection becomes what we call entertainment.
Wait a minute, say that again, Richard, because you broke up. Say that.
And make an analysis of it, and structurally has no benefit or changes no material condition for any black people in under any group within the American framework. So the thing is to be clear, if we were going to talk about people who are collaborators or therefore default from the position of what Brother Obai, what you're doing with the event, that cultural matrix, or what you mentioned, Brother Carl, in relationship to Mississippi or the farmer or any township declaring, that becomes a new paradigm we have to make the analysis from as far as, well, what kind of people we thought was down and said they were down, and then we come to work with them, and then they do something like off the cuff. And I think, Brother Kamul, you kind of raised that in relationship to even from the cultural, you know, trying to create the cultural relationships for around a cultural economy, that there's not enough people who are principled, who say they're culturally down, and that's more dangerous than what Amarosa or Charles Barkley, because we're trying to create a new beginning, and these people who claim they're down do something where we never get a start on it, or we perceive we're never getting a start on it, but you men are, you know, showing that we are. Brother Jones, in the film that you're making, Obai, and the event that you're producing, that we are getting a start, but we could be further along when we look at generations that passed and generations that is coming. So I think that we should be careful in when we're, who are the images that we're using to deal with the question of, are they default? Because those Negroes are expected. But I do like what you said, Brother Carl. We should be able to identify them. And that's intelligence, right? That becomes, do we have an intelligence operation as a part of our political nexus, as a part of our political infrastructure that gathers information to say, before the event, this person, we need to do something. Something need to be done about it.
That's a different way of looking at it, but that's a way of looking at it from the independence perspective as I see it.
Professor Professor Jones, talk about the release date of the documentary. People want to get in contact, how they can do that. Everything centered around it that you want to give out before we wind things down.
All right. Well, we don't quite have a release date yet. Yesterday was the private screening for the culmination of the movie. We do have some dates coming up. We have a date for another screening in New York sometime in January. I can't give you a specific date yet because we haven't knocked it down, but it's going to be within a month.
Okay.
And but we will be here in Philadelphia for the sort of breakthrough event here in Philly, February 18th at the Rotunda. And we'll be there.
Now, where is that at?
6 p.m. Rotunda is off the University of Pennsylvania 40, campus.
40 from Walnut?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, 40 from Walnut, my brother.
Okay.
So
there'll be another screening there.
Yeah, okay. We're looking for more black venues to, you know, offer space. Had a few set up, but unfortunately, it's a difficult time for us in regards to, you know, maintaining spaces. So we're looking for more black venues, not just here in Philadelphia, other cities. And if you're in other cities and you're listening, you want to bring the Independence Day Project to you, you can hit a brother up on Facebook at Carl Tone Jones. Put Carl Tone Jones in your search engine, you will find me. You can send me an inbox. You can look up the Independence Day Project. And if you want to hashtag, our hashtag is hashtag Black Independence or Die. So it's hashtag Black Independence or Die. You can go to the website. The website is currently under construction, but you still have access to the contact information and, ways to contribute to the project if need be. And that website is www.blackindependence.org. That's www.blackindependence.org. And I just want to say one final thing. First, first of all, thank you, Brother Elliot. Thank you all for inviting me to this platform. I've been watching your work for a while now. We were supposed to get together a while, a couple years ago. So it's
we
full
were?
Circle now that we're finally in.
Oh,
a lot of people don't know that.
We
were supposed to get together a while ago, but it's things happen the way they're supposed to. So the ancestors make things happen when it's supposed to happen. So I'm very appreciative of that. Brother Ova, Brother Kamal, the other brother on the show. I'm sorry, Brother Eric.
Richard.
I want to make Brother Richard. Okay, I'm sorry. I don't want to mess anybody's name up. Appreciate your time and appreciate your input. Appreciate you, the words, it's important, and because you put up a very valid point. With this project, we're no longer walking down the street looking at closed doors, lost opportunities, or lost, lost access. Now we're walking down the street and we're, looking at, we're looking through windows of opportunity. And when I was in Mississippi, I was in Coldwater, Mississippi, and I was walking down their main street, their town square. And I walked past business after business after business that was black owned. And I looked across the street and there were unoccupied buildings, but the buildings in the space were still owned by black people. And I'm looking at that like, wow, I know things in Philadelphia that will pop off down here, and we could bring commerce to this community. When you see the potential, you don't see the deficit, the things we can't, you don't see the barriers no more. You start to see the potential. That's what, when you start to have that liberated mindset where I'm not going to be held back and bound by these restrictions that they've placed upon us. There's opportunity for us, and we have to start doing, you said earlier, intelligence is how we start to address the enemy and the collaborators, but it's also courage because a lot of times we see it, but we don't speak on it. And we don't speak on it out of fear. It's not a fear in terms of being afraid, but a fear of saying, I don't want to make this strong stance because I might have to stand alone.
And it's, you know, being unapologetic and relinquishing yourself from that fear of saying, you know what, if they're not doing right by us, I'd rather stand alone. And righteousness for the power, for the empowerment of our community, than to sit quietly and allow them to continue to, with the wrongdoing that's taking place and the destruction that they're leading into our communities. Because this is life or death right now. They make no mistake about it. The Independence Day Project was made from the urgency of understanding that a final solution is in place for black people. And if we don't get ourselves together, we don't get organized, and if we don't find ways to protect ourselves, then they're planning the new American century 2035. You'll only see collaborators existing, texts of white supremacy existing in our place in that particular time set. The Negroes that was described in that particular time, you will not see us, because they will have found a way to collectively eliminate us. And they're putting those policies in place now. So this is why we have to focus on getting our acts together, figuring out how to move into these maroon towns or creating our own empowerment. Because one thing's for certain, net neutrality, the destruction of net neutrality, as well as the new policies on urban terrorism, identifying black identity extremism as a terrorist, you know, the most vital threat towards local law enforcement, these things aren't happening by happenstance. None of this stuff is coincidental, the way they're happening. They're creating us, they're targeting us as terrorists, and what they're going to do is break us down, isolate us from being able to communicate through social media, because that is the next medium that we've been, you know, having access to.
Exactly.
So that's where net neutrality come in at, because net neutrality makes it to where the tiers that we now have access to, for those who are you're either going to have to pay, or they're saying, I hear people talking about getting blocked as individuals. Well, they can block whole programs if you can't pay.
Exactly. And with understanding that, we have to understand that the game plan, we can no longer be reactionary. We have to be visionary and looking at what's going on and being chess players, playing 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 moves ahead to get ahead of this tidal wave that's headed our way. So with that said, brother, I appreciate your time, and I appreciate allowing me this space. And hopefully we'll be able to, you know, give more details in the next couple of weeks in regards to what the Independence Day Project is going to present. But for as of right now, we're going to be planning some things. So just keep a head up and keep a lookout for, you know, announcements made by myself, Brother Oba, and other members who also collaborated in the process. In a good way. Their collaboration, our collaboration, is a good type of collaboration that's needed for our community. So thanks again, and peace and love.
Professor Carl Tone Jones, I'll be in touch with you, brother. I got some things I want to throw at you, and we'll talk.
Yes, sir.
Peace.
Looking forward to it, brother.
All right.
Peace.
Brother Oba. Brother Kamal,
yes, sir.
It was interesting.
Yes, sir. We're here.
Interesting discussion this evening. And before we go, I mean, the vendor's already full, so you don't need any more vendors or anything. So just
no more vendors. I repeat, we need no more vendors. Just bring yourselves. This coming Saturday, the second annual Buy Black Marketplace pre-Kwanzaa celebration at the Church of the Advocate, 1801 Diamond Street. It starts at 2 p.m. from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. $5 admission for adults, free for children underneath the age of 12. We will have children's activities, the Children's Pavilion. We will have the East Coast Black Artist Comic Book Convention doing activities with children. We will also have Sister Amaris Selah perform, as well as the Universal African Dance and Drum Ensemble, and the Urban Shaman to perform. Brother Ron Green from What's Up African Apparel will speak, as well as several others speakers will be presenting ways on which to start your own business for those individuals who are aspiring entrepreneurs, young and old. So it's an event that, you know, we're speaking towards, you know, the younger audience as well as the older audience, and how to continue to support Black-owned, Black-operated businesses. And I'll highlight the lighting of the Kanara ceremony with the one and only Mama Maisha Ngoza of NACO, the National Association of Kawa Eater Organizations. She will lead us in our lighting of the Kanara, as well as going over the various different implements
to set up your Kwanzaa altar. Her and her daughter Malele will also be there as well to help us in that process. And it's going to be a great event. So we hope to have everybody come on out. I hope to see you Saturday, Brother Elliot. I wish that you could broadcast live from our event, but we can definitely talk about that. So,
okay, we'll be in touch. You know what? When we was talking about this, I might have spoken a little bit too soon because being that I was never into European holidays, I didn't realize, because a lot of people are going to be coming into my place of business because that's the day before that holiday, basically. So we'll get it straight. I'll kind of get things straight with Brother Richard and all. We'll talk about it. I'll be in touch with you.
Definitely. Okay.
Brother Oba. Brother Kamal. Hey, man, thanks for being with us. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for having
me.
Peace.
All right, now. Peace.
Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
Interesting discussion with Brother Oba, Brother Kamal, and Professor Carl T. Jones. I mean, I'm interested in seeing the documentary once it comes back around.
Yeah, it's great to hear, Elliot, these are our thoughts and one looking generation before me. Or coming after me, seeing what these brothers are doing, and then seeing that they're reflecting the same thoughts that I have grown to. So it's really encouraging, as we move to this here, this old age period. I'm not afraid of that. No, okay, yeah. Move to the elder status.
Don, you put yourself in the elderly. Don, Richard.
everybody keep telling me, so I might as well take ownership of it, right?
Yeah.
So, but it's good to hear, that they're moving forward and seeing that they're making that, seeing opportunities and connections. It's really... It's something there, Elliot.
Yeah. Oh, I know it. I know it. And in the coming weeks, we just haven't been able to synchronize schedules with Brother Callie Okuna down there from the Jackson Cush Project down in in Alabama to get him on. We've been kind of, once it's scheduled, something comes up, but we'll get it straight. And then within the next coming weeks, we're going to have Cynthia McKinney come back on with us, James Lance Taylor. We're going to be discussing some of these same issues. They're going to come up from people that are dealing with it and have dealt with it on another level to talk about the solutions from their perspective. It's always interesting to have.
And hopefully we can make those ties so everybody can see how where they fit in at. But they're still interconnected.
It's always interesting when we have Sister Cynthia McKinney back, on the program. So I'm looking forward to her coming back on. You know, one thing I want to mention to you, Brother Richard, before we leave the program this evening, we always got to be mindful of how Europeans deal with us. Professor Carl Tone Jones talked about chess moves and how they move, and we don't. Some of our people don't pick up on it. You know, I know I wasn't the only one that picked up on how mass media, and I'm talking about white media, dealt with this thing that happened down there in Alabama. You notice how they had plastered all over. Now, number one, when they put the stats out, I think 93% black men and 97% black women voted for this guy.
Right.
So when you're talking about over 90% of a vote, you're talking about basically all of the folks.
Right.
But if you notice, white media, black women is the black women put him over. Black women. See, they're always trying to drive a wedge between black people. And they always look for an opportunity to drive that wedge. Some of our people didn't pick up on it. Black women, I guess some of this feminist movement that the creeped into some a segment of some of our women's mentality is waving this black women feminist flag. But we got to realize that black people put this guy in office. Don't let this white media pit one against the other. That's what they do.
Right. Yeah, as you said, I mean, it's amazing. I haven't heard, read or heard where they said the black people of Alabama, as a political entity, even if it was 96, 97 for women, 93 for men, are they saying that the women and the men don't live together? Like there is no two people in the same house, male and female, and they came out from two separate areas and they went and voted separately. Not, it made it like the family is so itemized that you have to talk about black women. And there's, as somebody said, well, it may be reason why the number of black men didn't equal the number percentage-wise as the number of black women. Even if we don't deal with incarceration, talking about, well, how many of the men died before their wives? How many are in the service? How many are under, be for real. Like, black people of Alabama came out, they organized, and they came out. But as you say, they want to separate it.
Oh, yeah.
And even the ones who claim to be liberal, the language just falls off. You know, therefore, women are supposed to get something out of it, but the men are not.
I know it. Different headlines on it. In fact, I pulled one down that I wanted to throw out to the listening audience, but we up against it. We'll talk about it when we have our guest on. But that black women is due some type of reward from the Democratic Party. Black people, period, ain't getting no reward from this Democratic Party,
right?
Let alone Republicans. I mean, if we don't come up with something, that's why, with the brothers, all of the brothers that was on tonight was talking about, we got to come up with something different than what we've been dealing with, because we're going to keep getting the same response from this system.
Right.
So, the onus is on us. It's clearly on us. Before we leave this evening, again, I want to talk about the lineup tomorrow, Monday, at 11 o'clock. We got African Perspectives with Brother Oshie from 11 to 1. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. African Perspectives with Brother Oshie from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Wednesday, Sister POC is back with Revive from 8 to 10 on Wednesday evenings. On Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, Black Economic Empowerment Program, is on from 9 to 11 on Time for an Awakening. On Fridays, Time for Awakening is back at 7, at 8 in the evening from 8 to 10. On Saturdays, SST, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, is on from 10 to 12 noon. And, we're working on trying to get one of the other programs up and running. Black Reality Think Tank is scheduled to be on Saturday from 4 to 6. And then Sunday, we're back again with Revive and at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Time for Awakening back at 7 p.m. on Sunday evening. More programs slated for January. The family is growing, and it's all good. As far as I'm concerned, it's all good. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back, Lord willing, to continue this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they
job to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Such a small part of the things that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman.
Save the children.